want to welcome in Scott Howard Cooper of NBA.com. Scott, we realize you're not busy at all today, so thank you so much for joining us. And I guess we'll start with, what in the world is Boston going to do with that third pick?
I was hoping you would tell me. The Celtics have that pick in play. They have other picks in the first round. They have the spare changes, some second-round picks. They have future lottery picks because, remember, they have the right to swap with the Nets next year as well, a pick that looks like it's going to be very valuable as well. The Celtics are in the situation that they're trying to find somebody that can help them now. I think they'd much prefer to get a veteran, try to turn that number three pick into somebody that can help them make a playoff push in 2017. Not somebody that they would be saying, look, we got a nice prospect. This guy will be really good for us in 2 or 3 years.
You think they would make that pick available, the Brooklyn Nets pick next year available if the deal was right this year?
I think anything is available, absolutely.
And with that said, Scott, I think Boston's really an intriguing team because they were already good. And I think if Danny Ainge has a good night or a good offseason, looks like to me a team that could be one of the favorites in the East next year.
I agree with you. I don't know about – I don't think I would put anybody ahead of Cleveland right now as the favorites, but your point is well taken that they have a chance to push into that conversation about teams that can make long playoff runs. I'm going to resist getting too far down the line on who's looking good for next year because we're just now starting to look at rosters for next year. We'll have a much better idea around August and certainly heading into training camp after the draft, free agency, and trades.
Hey, Scott, I want to shift to the Sacramento Kings. We've heard a lot of reports lately that players did not show up to work out for the Kings, not much participation. Why is this franchise, with all the turnover and things that are changing and positive for the future, why is this franchise being treated like a pariah, all these players?
Because what has changed?
They got a coach, and
we got a nice arena,
and they got a brand new arena. So
got a nice arena. Now that's not to say that I'm on the side of the players and the agents because I'm not. Because I think that this whole process has turned into a pretty bad situation that the agents run the draft and so much of the league. But I think the question is, why do you think things have changed? They've got an arena, but they've had new coaches before. I think we all want to give Vlade the benefit of the doubt and say he's a very smart guy who's going to work hard and has a lot of basketball experience, but that didn't turn into anything last year, did it? When the great accomplishment of your season is to break 30 wins, I don't know why you're expecting that agents and players should be excited about what's going on here. They've had another coaching change. They have more bad chemistry in the locker room. It's a situation that they need to prove it to people, not just talk about it.
Did I mention the brand new arena? Did I mention that?
Yeah, he mentioned it.
Not just a new arena, but a fantastic arena.
Yes, any
free agent that comes through there would certainly be incredibly impressed. So that's, again, not to take away from any of the positive signs, but since you asked me why is there still some disbelief around the league, among other players who may be about to become free agents or among agents who are deciding where they want to steer their clients, it's because nothing has actually changed. There's been a lot of talk about change, but nothing has actually changed.
Scott Howard Cooper of NBA.com. Is there an impactful player or a player that could help the Sacramento Kings available at 8, or is it just going to be we'll take what's there and try to make something of it?
Are you talking immediate impact, or are you saying is there a good player?
Before the rookie deal is over, let's say within the next 3-4 years.
Yes. I think that they're in a pretty good place, actually. I know that they would have hoped to move up from number 8, but it's after the Kings pick that there's the next cliff. Basically, you have 1 and 2 is the first tier, mm-hmm. and then you have 3 through 8. Is the next tier. So there's the same 5 names that get mentioned all the time when you talk to front offices and scouts and things like that. It's just everybody has a different order on what the same guy who could go third may end up going 8th, and it wouldn't be considered any kind of big slide. So yes, they will get somebody that is well thought of around the league at number eight. I'm not necessarily saying it's immediate impact because there's a big difference between Chris Dunn and Buddy Hield, for example, guys with a lot of experience and older players, compared to somebody like, say, Jaylen Brown from Cal, who's a terrific prospect, but is also a one-and-done, so he would need more time.
So, Scott, if the Kings are truly at the end of that second tier, the cutoff is eight, would there be any desire to move that pick? Would anybody want to jump in at that value at number eight?
I'm sure there's been a lot of conversations. The Kings have talked about moving up, moving down, staying where they are, trading out of the first round entirely. My sense is the pick just does not have great value. It's a soft draft this year, especially up at the top. And the Celtics at three are trying to make a trade. Minnesota's been in a lot of conversations at five about making trades. It's not like the Kings are the intersection of where teams need to go. It would take a very unique situation for somebody to give them any kind of offer. I'm sure when people, once it gets to five or six and people see who's going to be among the options who might still be there at eight, the phone may be ringing, but I suspect somebody is just going to try to poke around and kick the tires a little bit to see if they can get something on the cheap. My sense is that the Kings use the pick themselves.
What do you think about the Derrick Rose deal?
I like it for Derrick. I like it for the Knicks. It's too bad the way his career took such a sharp turn in Chicago. He had so many things going right. The Bulls were a team that was on the upswing. He was playing in his hometown. He was playing at an MVP level. And then just injury, chemistry problems there, coaching change. So it's too bad how that turned. But I think if he had to go somewhere, he could have done a lot worse than New York. Certainly not a team that's ready to contend for the championship, but I think that it's a team that's ready to push into the playoffs. And if you're Derrick Rose and you're a point guard and you're thinking, I'm going to be passing the ball to Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis, that's not such a bad outcome. It could have been a lot worse.
Is there a free agent besides the obvious in Kevin Durant, realistically a free agent for New York that could make that team an upper Eastern Conference, part of that upper echelon of the Eastern Conference?
I would say playoff team. I'm not ready to say upper echelon, say top four, mm-hmm. And say home court advantage. Again, we have to wait and see how all the roster moves shake out between now and the end of the summer. But I think at this point that the Knicks would be looking for a center. In fact, I'm sure of it, and including some very big names. Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose's teammate in Chicago, is a free agent and a New York guy. Dwight Howard.
I was hoping you'd say that.
and one other name, Pau Gasol, will probably be having some conversations as well. So I think, again, the Knicks have an opportunity here that if Derrick plays with the mindset of wanting to show people what he's still got and they do add a center in free agency or in a trade, I think the Knicks have a chance to make a step forward.
You know, Scott, if you're a team like, let's say, Golden State, do you even show up for the draft? You know what I mean? Like, what can you get?
Well, I don't know. Let's ask Isaiah Thomas how things can turn out even twice as late as right. The Warriors are going to go. You're always thinking of possibilities. And if you're the Warriors, you're obviously realistic. But you're also saying, you know what, there's a guy there that we like, and we think if he spends two more years in Europe or in the D-League or maybe in China, that the guy can develop into a rotation player for us one day. You're not thinking somebody's going to come in and break the starting lineup. Certainly nothing right away, but people have found contributors and even all-stars much later than 30 in the past.
Yeah, you know, speaking of that, Scott, why is, you know, the draft, usually they get all the right guys, but the order can be wrong. It's really a difficult process. I don't know if you have an answer to this, but why can we find a guy sometimes drafted 16th that becomes the best player in the draft, or a guy that goes 8th is better than number 1? It happens a lot. Why do you think that is?
Human error. Just people do every bit of research imaginable between the eye tests of watching them in the games. They do background checks. psychological, get to know these guys personally. They talk to a lot of people from their background. And sometimes you just miss, and that's why you have guys that go from second round to the All-Star. That's why you have guys like Brad Miller who go undrafted, who don't even get picked, and end up having long, successful careers. There's no great explanation other than the bottom line, and that's sometimes it's people just miss. And it's not like any one team missed. Look at Draymond Green. We're talking about the Warriors. What can they hope to get at 30, and why do they even bother showing up? Well, because they have Draymond Green, they pick later than 30, mm-hmm. and that seems to have turned out pretty well. There's no explanation. It's just a very, very inexact science.
Hey, Scott, the 76ers and Lakers have the top two picks in here, and they're going to get who they want to get. But I feel like they're both still years away from being a factor in the NBA. Do you think either of those franchises are getting closer to rebuilding?
There certainly will be taking steps forward. Again, we need to see what are the other moves that come later in the summer. But I would think that the Lakers are going to be particularly encouraged. They've got a coach that is going to make a difference. They now will have D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, Brandon Ingram, and Julius Randle. That's not a terrible starting point to get good. And it's just a matter of filling in around and hoping these guys develop. The Lakers are farther along than Philly. I'm not saying the Lakers are in a playoff picture, because they certainly are not, but you could see something building there. With Philly, we have to wait and see with the Sixers especially, because the Lakers, we have a pretty good idea on what the roster is going to look like. The Sixers, we have no idea, because they not only are making draft picks tonight, they're working hard to make a trade as well. They could have Nerlens Noel or Jahlil Okafor in camp, or they could easily be traded by the end of the night or by the end of the summer. So Philly's got a lot more moves to make than the Lakers do.
Scott Howard Cooper of NBA.com. Who is the best player? I mean, outside of Ingram and Simmons, who is the best player in that next group?
That depends who you talk to. I know that there's a lot of people who would say Dragan Bender, who played last year in Israel, sort of a Tony Kukoc type, a 7-footer who can handle the ball and get other people involved. Other people would say Chris Dunn, the Providence point guard. I had one GM tell me that Chris is good enough right now to start for a good team as a rookie, not just a team like the Sixers that's kind of scrubbing along, but that people really think highly of him. Buddy Hield, if you're looking for a shooter, that's your guy. So I don't know that there's a consensus third best. I think it's probably between Chris Dunn, maybe, is leading that conversation right now.
Scott, I'm curious, the way the NBA has changed, the way the Warriors have changed the game, Houston, teams that are dominant in shooting threes, has that hurt draft prospects that are bigs, traditional bigs? Are those guys being undervalued now?
I don't think a lot, because what you're finding is a lot of bigs who can shoot. Look at Kristaps Porzingis, 7'3", and people love his range. Marquese Chris, athletic, power forward, but he can step out and he can hit from the perimeter. It's just the way the game is evolving. I think some of the guys that you mentioned will still get drafted. I should say some of the type of players that you mentioned, those guys are still going to get drafted. People will always want, if you can go in there and protect the rim, clog the inside on defense, block some shots, grab some rebounds, there's always going to be a value for that. But there's no question that the game has changed to where guys like Karl Anthony Towns are much more valued than Kristaps Porzingis, the power forwards and the centers that are able to do more than, say, throw me the ball 8 feet from the basket and I'll score from the post. Karl Anthony Towns is going to have a great career because he's going to show three-point range, which is a pretty amazing statement for the way the game is changing.
Scott, we know you're super busy today. We thank you so much for taking a few minutes to join us.
It's my pleasure. Have a great day.
Thanks, buddy.
You too. Scott Howard Cooper of NBA.com.